Welcome to the Land Investing Business Secret Podcast, where each short episode, we talk about the strategies, experiences, and the tools to help you launch, grow, and scale your land business. Learn how to find freedom within your own business, find out ways to build consistency in your processes, and hear how other everyday land investors are winning so you can get to the next step closer to building your dream life through your land business. And I'm your host of the Land Investing Business Secrets Podcast by Pebble, Jesse Kwong. Hey, how's it going? It's Jesse here from the Land Investing Business Secrets Podcast. I have a special guest here with me today. His name is Wayne Berger. I got to meet Wayne not too long ago. I've also got him recommended onto my show. And I love this episode because Wayne is completely going to share with you, you know, his journey and his struggle. And really, it took him a long time to get momentum in the land business, which I'm sure a lot of you are also in the middle of. Maybe you're creating excuses for yourself. Maybe you are looking to maybe slowly back out. But I want you guys to have a listen to this episode. He shares a lot of gems, his journey, and some insights as to some of the strategies he's doing nowadays. So it is a chock full of information and inspiration from my special guest, Wayne, here today. Anyways, enjoy this episode here with Wayne. Cheers. Hey, how's it going, everybody? All right, I'm really excited to have my guest here. I actually got to meet him in person at one of our good friends, Mastermind out in Vegas. I've got Wayne Berger here. Wayne, how are you doing?
Doing fantastic, Jesse. It's great to be here. It's a little surreal, quite honest, but I'm really excited to have a chat.
I appreciate it. And by the way, everybody, Wayne is on vacation. He's taken some time off here to speak with us. So I'm really grateful for your time. So thank you once again for coming on the show. Well, Wayne, how do we start this? You come from a very interesting background. And before we get into that, why don't you just tell us, how did you actually even get into the world of land?
Yes, great. Everyone has their origin story, right?
Yeah.
Ours is interesting. I suppose not unlike a lot of people. We had a friend of ours, Stephen Tuncha Hokanson. We live in Minnesota, and just been friends of ours for a while. And they were getting started in the Land Geek program, and so they started telling us about it. I was actually, this is COVID year, so this is like probably like April or May of 2020. And as everyone was, I was doing some house projects outside. I think it was building a chicken coop or something that weekend. And I thought, this sounds crazy, but they told me about the podcast. So I listened to their podcast, which is typically what I do when I'm doing outside work. And I must have listened to 15 or 20 different episodes. And by the end of that day, I was like, this sounds awesome. Like, I would love to tuck into this. So before we knew it, we signed up for flight school, and that's kind of how we got started. And there's a whole longer story I'm sure we'll get into a little bit in terms of the guys I met through that program and the influence that's had. But that's really how we got started. Like a lot of other people, heard on podcast and off we went.
Yeah. No, that's awesome. And then how were you, you know, let's just say for the last 12 to 24 months, how are you sort of engaging in land business? Because I think it's a little bit more unique than most land investors. You want to talk a little bit about that?
I think it's been about 3.5 years here. We're recording this early January. So happy new year, by the way. It's funny how the last, every year has been a little bit different, right? That first year was just sort of searching around in the dark. And I was really grateful to be in there's a small mastermind group that Buck Risby, I know has been on your podcast, a good friend of ours that started this little group of guys. And it really kept me in the game. I think I probably would have quit 12 to 18 months in if it wasn't for those guys, because they were all building really good businesses. And I was, I had every excuse in the book, quite frankly, to be a little vulnerable. I had a full-time job and, you know, family is, you know, that's not necessarily unique, but I let it kind of just keep things on a slow simmer instead of really, really tearing through the last couple of years. But yeah, things got more serious in the last 12 to 18 months. And in particular, last year, and you know this part of my story, I think I told you a little bit of this when we met in Vegas, is 2023 was just a really hard career year. I've been in the software world for 20 years and specifically doing CRM work for the last 8 or 9. Yeah, lost my job and then lost it again. So I lost two jobs in 2023. And so it was really challenging career-wise. And, you know, just finding my identity and figuring out, well, what do I really want to do? And I was really grateful just to kind of have land percolating in the background and some good things going and a little bit of momentum, not a lot, but really, really excited about 2024. I think it's going to be the best year of my life. And so, yeah, I don't know, that wandered a bit, I guess, in terms of the question you asked, but
that's a little great. You know, one of the things you mentioned was really interesting. You mentioned you had every excuse sort of to let the business just sort of go at a simmering pace, and nothing wrong with that, to be honest. But it sounds like, was there a reason, or was there something, looking back at it now, what would you say was, you know, perhaps, I don't know if it was actually holding you back, or you just, you know, didn't want to sort of grow the business just yet because you were focused on your job. And I'd love to talk a little bit about that as well. But what do you think was going on now that you're sort of looking back at that?
Yeah, really good question. I mean, I actually love having these conversations. It's a little uncomfortable to be vulnerable sometimes, but I've actually learned to kind of embrace it in the last couple of years. And it's true. It probably isn't any one thing, Jesse. I think it was a combination of an imposter syndrome. You know, I had a little bit, like, I watched friends of mine actually build really, really successful business, guys that started right at the same time, Buck and Drew Haney and a couple other, you know, guys. And in some ways I was sort of frustrated. I was disappointed in myself. And, but I will say one thing, and this is maybe just to give a little encouragement to your listeners that may be in the same spot and have busy lives and a full-time job and are trying to do this as a side hustle, because let's face it, that's where I think most people start, is as a side hustle, is just, you got to get in community. Like I said, I probably would have given up, right? If I wouldn't have had those guys every Monday or Tuesday, I think we've changed it a couple of times, but we were on a call every week. And I just kept showing up. And if you ask Buck, actually Buck told me this a couple of months ago, he said, "Man, one thing I really appreciate about you is you just always show up. Just always show up, whether you..." And I sometimes felt like I didn't have a lot to contribute because I didn't make five sales that week like some of the guys were doing. But I was like, it's better for me to be here than to be off somewhere else and wallowing in it. So getting community, started going to a couple of land events last year, and that made a big difference to me as well, just to kind of meet people like yourself face to face. And it just makes a huge difference. Hard to really put a value on what that is. So if any way, shape, or form you can get around more land investors, look for local meetups. There's a local meetup in Minnesota where I'm at, and that's been super valuable too, just to get to know the Dave Dennistons and the other. It's just cool, you know, you never know who you're going to run into and develop a connection with. So so I don't know if that's really the ultimate thing, but I do know that's something I've struggled with over the years at times, and I'm by no means perfect. I haven't really figured all the aspects of that out, but getting around other people that that can support you and just that you can learn from, and then you can, there's always something you can give back.
You know, it's so and it can be misleading when we have guests on this show or another show, whatever it is. We typically hear how somebody struck success or very quickly, and they don't realize you know, there is this other side of the picture too, where it can take some time. And in fact, I think this is more common than most people realize, how much of a mental game running a business can be. You know, so the imposter syndrome. I mean, I can completely relate to you on this. You know, and so you were going through that. You had a core group of, you know, friends or that you were in a group with. What was that typically like? You met every Monday. Was that more of an accountability? Were you guys updating each other? Were you guys talking about challenges? Give us a little bit. If you had to say, oh, you know, there's this rough framework we kind of have, how did that look like? So other people, maybe they want to start something up. They have no idea how to run something. It doesn't have to be super formal, but I mean, is there some sort of a little bit of a structure you guys have?
Yeah. Good question. You definitely want some structure. When you do it for 3.5 years, as we have, it ebbs and flows a little bit, right? Like it's not always, we're not always like very deliberate, but to Buck's credit, you know, he was pretty good about saying, hey, you know, we want to make sure we have some, a little bit of accountability, a little bit of everyone, you know, bring a share, right? I think that, so I give him all the credit, and I'm sure he's learned it from other groups and other entrepreneurial things that he's been involved in. And so certainly give him the props there, but I think all in all, where we've seen the most value, the seasons in which we've really gotten the most out of the group is that, yeah, we have a little bit of structure. It's not super formal, man. We have a lot of fun. I mean, they're just great guys. You have to like the people you're in community with too. And so I would say try really hard to find people that you really, really connect with in different ways. And so we've had a lot of fun. And we look forward to speaking, I think, every week. But I think in terms of people who are looking for a model, it really is just about you want to have some accountability. You want to have, and you have to be vulnerable too. This is the other thing. I guess this may be the topic for the day is vulnerability, just because it just seems like that's been so valuable. It's easy, I think, as a business owner, or as a guy, or whatever, you know, whatever stage you're in, or whatever you happen to be. I think that being willing to say, hey, this is my blocker right now. We've actually come to like that. That's a term that we use, and I'm sure others do too. What's your blocker, right? Bring something. You're like, hey, I need help with this. Or here's a seller issue I'm dealing with. Or here's whatever it is. It could be anything. And it could be funding, right? That was another one. I know it was one that I brought to the group a little while ago too, was, hey, I'm just struggling with finding, you know, good funding for my business. And there's lots of ways to tackle that, right? But in particular situations, you know, it's a good chance, especially if you've been meeting for a little while, that one of your fellow investors has come across that or knows the right person to talk to. And so, and I will say too, this is actually the area in which when I wasn't doing a ton of deals early on, I was glad we had this, because this was the area I felt like I could bring something, right? I could talk about some bit of software I heard about, some tool, some website, an audiobook. It could be anything, right? It didn't have to be land specific. It could be mindset. It could be a whole bunch of different things. But I always tried to show up every week with something that would be of value, regardless of what I had to bring something, right? I didn't want to be empty handed. And so I think if you sort of cultivate that little culture, a mini culture in your mastermind or whatever that is, super important. If it's weekly, if it's biweekly, find a cadence that works for you. I've been invited to a couple others that I attend as well. One that's biweekly right now, and trying to make the time. It's easy. You know, I think if I said yes to everyone that asked, like, hey, would you come do this? I wouldn't have time to run my business, but it's fun to find those groups. And, if it's one, if it's a couple, find whatever works for you.
That's awesome. Now, how big is the group itself?
Yeah, you know, we started, so kind of show you the funnel. Like when we started in the flight school program, there were probably 20, 22 to 25 people, I think, in the whole class. And there were maybe 8 to 10 that put their hand up at the end of the class, said, yeah, I want to continue. Like, I want to be part of the accountability group. And over time, and again, this isn't to slight anybody, but you know, it's just natural, right? It was 10, and then it was 8, and then it was 6. And now it's really, there's 5 guys. We've added one, you know, it evolves over time, but really that original core group, there's basically 4 of us and 4 or 5. Well, there's 2 guys that are partners, so we kind of count them as one, but there's 4 business entities. And we're still trucking along, and it's great. And I'm now the 3rd of those 4 that's been on the podcast. And I think it's funny that my name popped into Drew's head when he was on your podcast, because I was like, why would you do that? I'm not an educator. I don't, you know, like it was kind of funny, but I'm grateful that he did. But, I feel like a little bit of a different guest for you, but I think that's actually, the more I thought about it, I thought, again, this is the imposter syndrome thing. I was kind of like, why would Jesse have me on? Right. Like I'm just running a little business here, but at the same time, I think that's probably the bulk of your listeners, right? They're just trying to make it go. Right.
Yeah.
And well, so
speaking about the listeners, I mean, for those who may be slowly trucking along and finding it a struggle to, you know, get traction or get consistency, you know, what would you tell those people who may be on, you know, close to maybe giving up or wrapping up on it or giving themselves an excuse to just slow down and maybe fizzle out? What would you tell those line of investors, and what have you learned, you know, with your journey?
Yeah, that's such a great question, I think, because it is. And I'm not going to give any kind of like, here's your magic land technique, right? Because you can find all of that, right? That's not, I'm not here, I think, to give anybody any special land magic or anything. But I think, yeah, the community, obviously, that's one big thing, right? So find a community of people that can help keep you on track, and you can really know that you have some support. I honestly think too, it's keeping it simple. This is an easy business to make overly complicated early on. There's lots of ways to do the land business, as you know. Like you've had plenty of guests. If you listen to any kind of you know, podcast, you look around, it doesn't take long to realize that there's a million different ways that you can do this business. And so keeping it simple and then just building on that is really, really important. Get some deals under your belt. If you've done 5 deals, right, get to 10, get to 20. I've been listening to this fantastic audiobook that I just discovered called It Only Takes a Goal, I think is what it's called, by John Acuff. And it's fantastic because, you know, I mean, I've known about goals for 30 years, right? So, and most of us know, kind of understand the idea of goals. But the gist of the book is this idea that, you know, we all get this feeling like, especially now, right? Like New Year's time, everybody wants to kind of make big changes, right? And it's easy to kind of take that on and you go for a little while, and inevitably within a few weeks, you get off track, right? You miss a day or you miss a couple of days or something happens, you get sick. If you get off track a little bit, then you're looking at the rest of the month, the rest of the year, the rest of my life and this habit that I want to establish. And suddenly it seems too daunting and it's easy to quit. And I think we all know that feeling, right? And one thing I like about Acuff's approach is that he breaks it down in a way that sort of helps you say, it's a little of the atomic habits, you know, small habits, like micro habits, that kind of thing. But I think it's this idea that you don't make it this big thing that you have to give up on. And you do these like little things and you grow on it. So I'm not doing it justice at all. He's a very funny, entertaining kind of guy. If you get the audio book, I promise you it'll be worth it. So it's fun and funny, but he's written several books. He's a really interesting guy, but anyway, it really resonated with me. I think he's got a great way to do goals in a way that you avoid that kind of pressure and discouragement of if I get off track, suddenly it seems unattainable and then it's just easy to give up. So he has a process to help you never get to the point where you feel like this isn't worth doing. So definitely would check that out. So I think in terms of your question, that it's just, I think that's super important is that when you're setting goals, do it in a way such that, you know, you don't have to, you know, I have some friends doing 75 hard right now. That's their New Year's thing. And it's like, all power to you. But I told them, I'm like, I'm doing like the smallest, simplest, easiest, I know I'm going to succeed kind of goals right now, because I know that's what I need at the moment. And that's okay. Like, I just give all your listeners permission that is okay to do small, perfectly like achievable, almost ridiculously small goals. And that's okay too. There's a lot of value in that.
So I hope you're enjoying this episode here. And Wayne talks about having a community, an accountability group, a mastermind. And one of the things that I am doing and I'm putting together is called the Dirt Hacker Challenge. And it's going to put you in a cohort of other land investors who are like-minded. You're going to get to engage with them. You're going to get to meet them. You're going to get to share your challenges and wins and help each other as well during this challenge. And it's one of the best ways also to meet others at these events where you guys have something in common. So this challenge, what it's all about is actually getting your business scaled. And so if you are interested in this 5-day challenge, I think you're going to find this a no-brainer to join me. I run this once every, I would say, month and a half. Head over to dirthackerchallenge.com, and you're going to meet a lot of other like-minded individuals that are also land investing, but maybe didn't come from the coaching program you're part of or the community you're currently part of, and they're bringing other perspectives in. And who knows, you may end up building an accountability group. I've had several challenges that I've run previously, and they are still They're still kept together, and they've got an accountability group that they're telling me about that they're still part of. So make sure you check this out. It's dirthackerchallenge.com. The next one is coming up here. So make sure you join me on that. It is 5 days on how to put together a framework to scale a business and much more. Anyways, enjoy the rest of this episode. You know, you mentioning about goals and, you know, your friends are doing 75 hard. And so when you're in your mastermind group and you're hearing, you know, your other buddies, you know, starting to take off and things are, the gap is widening between you and them. How did you continue to pull yourself through that? What did you do? Was it through your them encouraging you? Like, there had to be something that, you know, kept you going, and I'm glad you did, and here we are now. But you know, what was that kept pushing you along and stuck with the group? Because it's, again, like, if I can see myself, if I'm part of that group, I would feel so discouraged. And you know, this might be a knee jerk kind of a response or reaction, but maybe I would avoid going to events and meeting people and kind of climb up and shell up. And yeah, you know, it's rough being in a position like that. So what moved you along?
Yeah, I mean, some of that is just a testament to the guys I was in community with. So I would say pick your community really carefully, because they never once, I shared with them one night, I'm like, guys, I feel like I'm not really bringing anything to this group because I'm not really progressing the way I want to. Sure. And they were not having it. He said, no, you are not. You know, that doesn't, you bring this and this and this. And so I think the effort that I put into at least bring something and be a positive influence and to always be there. There's just so much to be said for just showing up, right? Like that we hear that all the time, like just show up. I think some of it as well was a realization after a little while that I am not, the comparison game just does not, there's no health. There's nothing to be gained in that. And I still suffer from it, right? I think we all do. But if you can learn to catch yourself and have just a little bit of humility and say, look, it doesn't matter. Like, I don't have to be Grant Cardone here. Like, that's not what I'm trying to accomplish. Figure out what it is you are trying to accomplish and break it down. And that's why I think I like this goal setting framework really, really well, is because it does kind of keep it in a framework that you can feel like, oh, I can really own this, and I don't need to try to be this person or that person. I learned to appreciate what the other guys had accomplished, because there were times where I felt like, gosh, I see all the success around me, and boy, did I blew it, right? 3 years of some of the best years in the land business, right? Who would have known at the beginning of COVID that would have been like maybe the ideal time to have started in the last 5 years. And yet I didn't take advantage of it, right? That's a reality I have to kind of live with, but that's okay, right? My path was different, right? I wouldn't be, who knows what would have happened, right? But I can't change it. So like, why dwell on it?
Yeah.
And then the last thing I would just mention is I think there was a level of, I needed to instill a little bit more humility in my life at the time. And I don't think I've ever really had a big ego, but and humility, I think is funny, because it's one of those things that they say, if you claim humility for yourself, then it just proves that you don't have it. And I think it's really, really true. It's really, really true. And I will say, though, it is something that you can consciously work on, right? I want to be a little more humble, a little less, this is about me. This is about what I, you know, when you kind of focus on how can I serve other people? How can I serve my family? That humility helped me a lot to realize, like, look, it helped me pull back from the comparison, mindset, and just realize that, hey, look, you know, this isn't, I have things to offer, but yet I have so much to learn. I'm just going to come at this whole thing from a perspective of humility and just be really open-minded. I don't know it all. And so, that's a place for which you can grow really, really quickly when you have that kind of an attitude. That's from my perspective around it.
I love that. Thank you for sharing all of that. Now moving to where we are now, you're excited about this new year. You know, I think things are, it sounds like things are picking up in a certain aspect of your business. What would you say if, you know, and I'm sure everybody's different, but I would love to hear your story. What do you think sort of made and flipped the switch here, that things are maybe picking up momentum and you're getting excited about things again. Well, what do you think you would attribute that to?
Yeah, well, in a funny way, a portion of it at least is the fact that I lost my job last year. Right. And it forced me to do some things in a way that I hadn't, right? Like I wasn't a full-time land investor, and I have now been for, going on 5 months now, something like that. So not a long time. But man, I've been in the business long enough. I know how this should work. And so Drew and I were actually in the process of working on a partnership, of which we're now kind of working together on some things. And he was just such a great, I consider him just a great friend and mentor, and was really appreciative of him saying when that happened, because I called him, right? The second time I lost my job, I'm like, hey, dude, can't believe this happened. And I was having a little pity party for myself that weekend. And he just said, hey, man, this may be the Lord telling you to just, you should maybe do land full time. And it just hit me like a lightning bolt, like, wow, I think maybe you're right. And so that's part of what makes me really excited, is because I just realized that if I could get up and think about land and work on land all day, I've been doing some deal funding this year, which is just sort of a new aspect of that. And so that's been really, really fun to kind of think about what's my philosophy around that and how would I want that to work. So I think having a little bit of diversification makes me really excited. I do get very excited to get up every day and do some work, even on vacation here. I'm not working a lot, but it's been really fun to just kind of get up and think about, okay, what's happening in the business and what might I think about? I think my thought process while I've been on vacation has been much more free, just because I have something I'm excited to think about. And
yeah,
you know, it's not that I disliked the CRM and software world, but it just, I realize now, like, the corporate world is just, it's so different, right? The focus is different. So it was a little, again, all over the map there, but I think it's easy to go into 2024 pessimistic when you kind of look around at society and culture and all the kind of crazy politics and all that kind of stuff that we all have strong feelings about. But I'm very optimistic. I really do. I think it's the greatest country in the world, and we have so much opportunity. And, the last thing I want to say on that is that I realized actually this week, while I was just kind of taking a little breather and thinking about things, I realized that all of the stuff that I would sort of read and the news and all of that, I thought, did it change any of my actions or any of did I take any substantive change in my day-to-day life because of reading that article or the blog or the, you know, whatever? And I realized, no, I didn't. I mean, yeah. It got the juices flowing, right? I got thinking about things, but then I realized, wow, that actually isn't very productive. And it's not that I'm going to, you know, go and set myself away in a cloister somewhere and be a hermit, but it made me realize that, boy, spending any appreciable time on that kind of stuff, when I can focus on bringing value to the people I care about, I just want to think about that every day. So that's helped clarify my thinking around that kind of stuff. And so that's one of the reasons I'm pretty optimistic about this year too.
I love that. I'm excited for you. I can hear you're excited. I know we talked before this, how excited things are for yourself. Now let's talk a little bit about, you've mentioned it a couple of times. You used to be in the software world. You used to deal with CRMs. Coincidentally, this is something that I'm in and I'm working on.
That's right.
From a different angle, but I'd love for you to share with our listeners, you know, what were you doing before that? And maybe we can get some nuggets out of you as to your views on CRM. But first of all, tell us a little bit about your past life, I guess, or past career.
Yeah. Yeah, we can call it past. There's a part of me that feels like, okay, I was in that role for a reason. And so I kind of have to figure out, and I don't know how long it'll take, and maybe it'll take a long time. Maybe I never get around to it, but I feel like that experience should bear some fruit in this next, you know, season of my career. But yeah, I worked for Salesforce for the last 8 years, almost 9 years. in the CRM space. And so I worked for Salesforce. I worked for a Salesforce partner after I got laid off from Salesforce last year. And great experience. I mean, it's a crazy company though. I mean, huge company, and just got caught up in all the tech layoffs last year, and that stuff happens, right? But yeah, I was a solution engineer. I was actually working with large financial services companies, helping them figure out their strategy for how they want to get their sales, service, marketing all working together, systems integration, a vision for how they become more effective and efficient. And so it was very interesting actually when you really tucked into the big business problems. Now in the land, as it maps onto the land world, of course, nobody in our world has the complexity that, say, you know, a large bank or a big asset management firm or something like that would have with their CRM. But having said that, I still have some interest in like seeing how people become more efficient. Living in Minnesota too, I have the benefit of Callan Faulkner lives, you know, not too far from me, has become a close friend in the last few years. I know you know her well, and she's been on. She and I actually just started talking about maybe we do something. I don't know. So making no sort of promises here, but her and I were kind of talking about, I'm not a coach. I don't do any kind of education. But maybe that changes a little bit in 2024 where we're working on some things. So we're just kicking around some ideas. I've always admired the work that she's done. And when I was full-time, right, working in CRM, I couldn't, right, from a non-compete standpoint, I couldn't like go to Callan and say, hey, let's do, even it crossed my mind several times, but I thought, no, that actually wouldn't work while I'm still working full-time, for, you know, on CRM stuff. But now that I'm not, it's very interesting to me, and whether maybe it's telling me you and I should work on something. I don't, Jesse, let me put our heads together something from a Pebble standpoint. Cause we do use Pebble in both of the brands that we operate. We use Pebble and we use a couple other tools as well, but you know, integration is a key bit. I'm far from the best practitioner. I think you've had some other guests on that have been, you know, far better in terms of integration and making sure stuff just really, really sings. Hopefully I'll get to that point, but I think it's, that's kind of my background. I, like I said, I just have a lot of experience in CRM. I know it's a big challenge. Salespeople don't like putting data in. But once you get the data in, it's really about how do you get value out of that data, and how is the reporting work? So I think I'm probably pretty partial to tools that have really good reporting. That's what I'm always kind of looking for. If I were to, you know, sit down with Jesse and say, hey, here's what I think Pebble needs, it would probably be like, if I listed 10 things, probably 8 of them would be like, let's do this with the report and let's make this kind of report and do that. That's kind of my thing too. But yeah, so anyway, hopefully that helps give a little context as to where I'm coming from.
Absolutely. And we should sit down actually after this call. I'm going to talk to Kevin and make sure actually we grab a time with you and sit down.
Yeah.
I'm sure you've got a lot of insight. Wayne, yeah, I also wanted to ask you, you know, you've been, you know, on both spectrums, you've been in that area where it's been challenging to get the business up. Now you're in an area where you're really excited. You're getting momentum. You're exploring different things with land. So you've seen a lot. What would you say is the most, I don't even know if this is grammatically correct to say this, but what is your most contrarian advice you would have for a land investor? Something that goes against what most people would say. Is there anything that comes to mind? I feel like you, because it took you some time to get momentum, you've sat in that area where, you know, I've got a lot of guests who picked up momentum pretty quickly. So what would you say is your most contrarian advice or contrary?
Yeah, that's a great question. One that I'm not sure I've ever really thought about. I think we've touched on maybe a couple of things that might fit in that category though, right? One is my tiny goals idea, right? Like I think it's again, especially being the new year, whenever your listeners are on this, probably sometime in January, I would say, don't be afraid to like set ridiculously small, stupid goals, especially on those things that you feel stuck on. That's especially when you need it. Like just do a teeny tiny goal. What's the very next minimum little thing that you can do and start building a little success momentum. Yeah, I mean, there's probably something in there too about just, I mean, never give up isn't too contrarian, I guess. So, I think that's advice anyone would give. But I just think if I were to tell someone that was struggling, if they were kind of like, hey, this is the advice I'm getting is not working, I would just say, you just gotta just stick with, just keep showing up, right? Like, and if it's not working in the places you are, maybe find different places to show up. I love that. So yeah, I don't know. I have plenty of contrarian takes, but that isn't one where I have a bunch of, like, off the top of my, I'm sure as soon as we're done here, I'll come up with three or four things. But yeah.
Well, let me ask you this, you know, again, looking back now, if you were to start all over again, and let's say you had limited time, and a limited budget, how would you start? Like, you know, how would you start? What would the first 6 months look like? At a very
Yeah, I think I would honestly really focus on, I always thought, you know, the land business very clearly is kind of like, when you think of the standard model, it's two pieces, right? You got acquisition, disposition. I would, if I'm a brand new and starting over again, I would pick one of those two. And for me, I think disposition is the area in which is most interesting to me. I would probably find an area that has a reasonable flow of wholesale opportunities that I could go out and either wholesale or land arb, and I could acquire inventory that way. And land arb might be the easiest one, right? You're probably, if you're doing land arb, you're probably doing smaller parcels. And we have one of our brands that really does a lot of small parcel turns, deals, kinds of stuff. And you can build a really good business with that, right? It's still not, you know, I know sort of the motion is always go up market, right? From small deals to bigger and bigger and bigger deals, right? But that I've also seen that happen with a few folks in my circle where they focus on big, they had a really good business going. Then they're like, we're going to focus on big deals. And they go to big deals and then suddenly things dry up and it's crazy and it just gets really hard, right? And some of that's just timing in the market and who knows, there's lots of factors. But if I were to start over, I think that's probably what I would do is it would allow you to focus on, hey, you know, I'm just going to, whether it's, you know, developing relationships with realtors, or I get really good at Facebook marketing, or I get really good at land.com, or, you know, there's a bunch of other newer to it. Like every month, it seems like there's a new, you know, land network or something like that you can plug into, but try and test different things, but pick an aspect of it where you're like, I can really focus in and become an expert on this part. And I don't need to learn all of it at once. I think that was maybe part of my overwhelm early on, and maybe why I didn't get as much traction early on. It was one of those reasons that probably I was trying to figure out this whole process. And I also got a little analysis paralysis, like avoid that at all costs, right? Like just figure out what's the next step. Like, I don't need to, you know, if I'm brand new, I don't need to know like where I'm going to sell it just yet. I might be doing some research on that. But my first job is, where are the wholesale opportunities, right? Where do I want to work? Start reaching out to those people. That's it, you know, full stop, right? Just like set your goals on that thing. And then when you get there, this is a very forgiving business for figuring out the steps as you go along. I've actually seen a bit, I saw this just last night in a land group that I was in, where someone had posted about, I think their tax bill or something like that. And they just got admonished by a couple of people like, hey, you're not doing the land business right if you got a, you know, $30,000 tax bill at the end of the year. And it's like, really? That sounds like you're probably doing okay, right? You could do better, right? There's probably ways you could mitigate that tax bill, but, you know, good on you for having a big tax bill at the end of the year. Like that mindset of like, yeah, you don't know what you're doing if you haven't gotten it all figured out. Like, nah, that's not, don't go through life like that. Like that's, right. I tried, right? I've done that in parts of my life, like, and I have to fight it, right? But I would just say, if you're new, again, it's a little long-winded answer, but I think if you're new, find a portion that resonates with you. You're like, oh, I kind of could dig into this, and then learn that part. And then slowly you might be like, I want to build, now I can build an acquisition engine, or I can hire someone that kind of helps me build up the acquisition motion. Or maybe I never get to that. Maybe I'm, you know, like a Peter Nukasani model, right? Where he's just like, I think he's doing a lot. I know he's doing some different things now, but certainly when he started, it was very focused. Like, he's the perfect example of somebody who's like, I'm just going to do this little thing. I'm going to live here and I'm just going to do a ton of stuff in this little space. And he did it great. Right. So
when you mentioned land arb, for the people that don't know, what is land arb? If you can sort of break that down to somebody who has no idea what that even means.
Yeah. Sorry. I that always drives me crazy when people bring up terms and acronyms and stuff that aren't self-evident. So yeah, sorry for the assumption.
No, that's
so land cool. arb. Yeah. Land arbitration. So it's basically, there are wholesalers that, of course, will sell you their land. They'll buy a you know, they'll acquire it through their mailing or something, and they'll buy it for 4,000. They'll sell it to you for $7,000, and you can retail it for $14,000. But maybe you don't have the $7,000 to be able to buy it for $14,000, or maybe you don't want to put out the $7,000. So there are some wholesalers that'll say, I'm going to buy it at $4,000, and then I'm going to, you know, you can give me $300 down payment, and then just make, you know, $50 a month payments for the next, you know, 5 years or whatever. And the cool thing about that is that there's actually, you know, for very little cash up front, for a couple hundred bucks or whatever, you can control a property and then go market it. If you sell it for cash at 14, then you just pay off what you owe on the note, you make that thing. So, but your return on cash is huge. So it's a really cool model, and I don't see that many people doing it. I think, you know, for a number of different reasons, but that's what LandArb is basically that. The other thing is you can wrap it. Some people, you can sell, if you sell it on for cash, of course you just pay off the note. But if you sell it for terms, maybe you're paying $50 a month for the, you know, to the person that you bought it from. But you sell it for $80 a month or $100 a month to somebody else, right? So you're making this little, you're making this margin, this arbitrage. Yeah. For months and months and months. And a lot of times, like, you'll have it paid off, you know, before your note is up. So 2 years from now, suddenly your $50 a month becomes $250 a month because you're offset that. So it's just an interesting model for people that are maybe don't have a lot of cash or choose not to put a lot of cash out. Right. So a little bit more work, is a few more moving parts, but for someone who's really motivated to do that, it's a great way to, it's a great way to get started.
Awesome. Wayne, I want to thank you for all that you shared and being vulnerable and sharing some of the struggles and the things that got you out of that. I'm coming to the part of the podcast, which I call the quick fire round here. So I've got some questions I want to throw at you, and they're simple little questions. We'd love to learn a little bit more about you. So outside of land, what do you like doing?
You know, I just started doing jujitsu about 4 months ago, 4 or 5 months ago. I wanted to for a while. I'm a big fan of Jocko Willink, if any of you know him, the extreme ownership guy. I can listen to that guy all day. But yeah, he's always talking about that. So for a while, I finally found a gym near my home. It's through Gracie University. If anyone's interested in jujitsu, look up Gracie University if you want to get started. It's just a fantastic way to sort of learn the basics.
Awesome.
Yeah. Anyway, that's what's fresh in my mind right now.
What is your favorite food?
Oh, favorite food. Do I have a favorite food? My latest favorite food is just a good ribeye steak. Go with that.
What's one bad habit that you're currently working on?
Oh, a bad habit. My wife will love this. I crack my knuckles. And it drives her crazy. And I just, it's difficult. Do we have marriage problems? Yes, because I crack my knuckles. No, I'm working on it. It's getting a little better. But yeah, that's probably my bad habit.
What's your favorite show or movie that you've recently watched?
Oh, that I've recently watched. I don't watch a lot of shows, not a lot of television. I will say since I was in college, I've been a fan of Mystery Science Theater. And if you don't know what that is, then it's a goofy show that started in Minnesota back in the 90s. It's these little robots, and they riff on really cheesy, bad movies. But I watched an episode of that the other day. I know that's bizarre, and we're called Mystery Science Theater 3000. My brother would be so proud of me right now that I've mentioned this on a podcast. But yeah, it's fun. It's for the people. You kind of have to have a quirky sense of humor. So, but it's really fun. The original ones back from the 90s. But yeah, it's worth looking at.
Check it out.
YouTube is full of them, so you'll find some fun stuff on there.
Sure. A couple more here. Who would you recommend to come on this podcast, and why?
Yeah, so this one I actually did. I did not prepare any of the other answers, but this one I was like, oh, I know he's going to ask me this question, so I had a little bit of a thing. I actually have two. I was like, am I going to have anybody? Because you've already interviewed like just about everyone that I know in the land business. But I do have two land people that I think would be really interesting for you. One is Steve Hokanson. So the Hokansons were how we got started in land. But Steve runs a, him and his wife Tanja are successful land investors. But they also, I don't know if you've met Steve or you know Steve, but he has a bookkeeping business. And because he's a land investor, he understands how it works. And it's a really challenging thing. And I know as soon as he started, they've gotten really busy and successful. So I think he'd be great. Awesome. And I don't think another person I think has not been on your podcast yet. And maybe he just doesn't do podcasts, but JT Olmstead, I got to know as well. At the event that we met at, that's where I met JT finally. And we use the Your Land Loans product. I think it's great for the term stuff, but he's also got a very successful land business and just a super nice guy. So that's who I would recommend. And then if you have one other, this is not land related at all, but as an aspirational one, this guy that wrote the book that I was talking about, John Acuff. The dude's hilarious. He has his own podcast too, but as an aspirational thing, I think it'd be fun for your listeners at some point. I think he's just got a lot of wisdom and fun stuff. It'd be a really fun episode if you could ever get him on. So
I'm definitely going to add the book that you mentioned, the one about the goals. I'll see if I can drag him on the show and see if he's willing to share his thoughts on the show here.
Awesome.
Wayne, how can people, I know you might be working on some stuff, you might not be, I'm not sure, but I'm sure people want to chat with you. And I'm sure so many of my listeners or listeners here have gone through or are going through some struggles and maybe want to shoot you a quick message. How can people engage with you or get to know you or find out a little bit more and what projects you're working on? What's the best way for people to get a hold of you or interact with you?
Yeah. I think, I'm not a big social media guy. I think maybe because I've only been full time for a few months and I just haven't really focused on that. All my social media stuff is either just personal or my old Salesforce stuff. But yeah, I think Whetstone Land, I think if you can put this in the show notes or whatever, like it's just Whetstone, Whetstone land.com. That's our primary brand. And my email is just Wayne@Whetstone Land. So feel free to reach out to me there. It's probably the easiest way. Always happy to have a chat. Even just people just want advice. It's actually been really kind of fun this last year, particularly since I've started doing the deal funding, just people call and ask questions and email me and say, hey, you mind having a chat? And sometimes they're really interesting. Sometimes you people are struggling and it's always interesting. I shouldn't say sometimes interesting. It's always interesting to kind of hear where people are at. And, I'm always happy to help. I guess that's just the way I was raised, I guess. So kudos mom and dad for that. But I love to chat and happy to chat with anybody that wanted to dig into anything.
Well, Wayne, we'll make sure to include that. And I'm really excited for you in this new year. I know it sounds like you've got a lot simmering in your head right now as to different things that you may want to try. And you're getting involved with all sorts of different parts of land investing. So thank you so much for coming on, being vulnerable, sharing your story here on the podcast, Wayne. I really appreciate your time and I hope to have you back in the future.
Yeah, fantastic, Jesse. Yeah, I'd love to do this in a year and have that seven-figure story. I think this is a good chance. 2024 is the seven-figure year for us, but got to get out there and make it happen. So I really appreciate you having me on.
Awesome. Thanks very much, Wayne.
That's all I got. Yep. Thanks, Jesse.
Before you stop this episode or hit the next episode, I want to personally thank you for listening to this episode of the Land Investing Business Secrets podcast by Pebble. If you found this helpful, we'd greatly appreciate any awesome reviews and ratings on whichever platform you are listening to this on. And if you have 2 minutes and wanted to step it up even more and help others, feel free to share this in other Facebook groups or pages or any communities, giving others a heads up of the Land Investing Business Secrets podcast or the specific episode that may help them on their land investing journey. Once again, thanks so much for listening and catch you on our next episode.